Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Today, our guest is Edward James, author and parent. We had quite a long and wide-ranging discussion, so we're publishing it in two parts, with part one today and part two next time. I hope you enjoy listening. Here's part one.
Welcome to the podcast. Today's guest is Edward James, who is the father of three and the author of the book Bad Dad, The Truth Will Set You Free. The book talks about his experience of truth and lies, injustice, narcissism, mental health and love. The book aims to offer hope to others who find themselves in similar circumstances. Edward, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Really interested in your books and your story. Can you tell us a bit about the story, please?
Yeah, so I, like you said, I'm the father of three amazing kids. And I have had a very, very difficult 3 years of issues since separation from my now ex-wife. So post-separation, I was immediately stopped from seeing my children for no reason, and then was informed of allegations that had been made against me, multiple false allegations pertaining to the children and my ex-wife, of multiple counts of abuse, basically, which floored me, because they're completely incorrect, and I didn't know where to turn. So I had to enlist the help of a solicitor to get some advice, and then started the journey of trying to get access to my children and also to clear my name, which was the toughest, I think that's probably the toughest time of my life to date, both mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, and being kept away from your children, which is, you know, one of the worst things that can happen to a parent. And it was like hell, really. So I was newly separated and stopped from seeing the children, and had to apply to court to try and get a child arrangements order. And over the 3 years, basically went to and from court. And because of the nature of the allegations that were made against me, there had to be full investigation from social services. There had to be a clinical psychologist appointed to do full assessment on all members of the family, children, both parents. So that went on backwards and forwards. Took lots of time, and this was all amongst COVID as well. So we had all the COVID restrictions, which unfortunately was used at the beginning to stop me seeing the children as well, by their mother, yeah. Which was very sad. And then basically it was very quickly found out that the allegations were false. And after full investigations from everyone involved, I was allowed to start seeing my children, be it only for a couple of hours a week, and it had to be, you know, it had to be supervised, yeah. Which was pretty demeaning, I would say, quite embarrassing, having to call on family members, friends, to come and watch you with your children, who yeah. you know you're fine with, they know you're fine with, but because of, you know, allegations of any type of child abuse, has to be taken incredibly seriously until, you know, until it's proven to be a safe situation. So I did nothing but fully cooperate with everyone involved. It was completely open, honest throughout, which is a kind of a mantra that I now live by. Well, I always have lived by, but this has just made me even more, wanting to just, everything should be open, out in the open, and lies have no place. And my bullshit meter is very, very sensitive. And, yeah, so I eventually had some good time with my kids, but they then started to not turn up to court-ordered time with me.
Yeah.
And when they did, they very quickly began to start showing very, very strange behaviour, where they would hide from in a vehicle, their mother's vehicle. They would not communicate with me, not look at me, and not come to contact. Or if they did, it would be hugely problematic from the handover, where I would often be accused of, falsely accused of being aggressive, driving threateningly, anything you could think of that would cast a shadow over me and my character during proceedings. I think in the hope that I would give up and leave them alone and just let them live with their mother. And I think that was the end goal.
Yes.
But I was persistent. You know, I am their dad. I will always be their dad. And I was, you know, hell bent on justice being served and the children getting what they need, which are two parents. And the, you know, children need to have two parents in a capacity. You know, every family's got its own dynamic, and it's just key that they do have that good relationship with both, which is what I wanted from the outset. So whilst the court had instructed a clinical psychologist, she found that the children were being alienated from me. So that obviously that's when a child forms negative, disproportionate negative beliefs and thoughts and behavior towards the one parent.
Yeah.
And for our case, this was absolutely textbook, and you know what was found by an independent expert to varying degrees, especially with my eldest child, who would come to the house, and when he did come, there would be problems. He would vandalize the house, leave early, and be collected by his mother. And it was incredibly hard to be in the middle of a situation where you don't have any control over, and there is someone that is hell bent on pretty much trying to break you and stop you seeing your children. So things were pretty bad when I had times where I hadn't seen children for a month at a time. And gradually got better. And then I had the supervision was, curtailed, and I had observed visits from social workers, psychologists, etc., and every single time the children acted completely appropriately, which they always did around me. It was just the lead up to and after these contact sessions. So you know that they were appropriately affectionate towards me, as children should be, and you know there was deemed no issues with how I was parenting. In fact, my methods of parenting were praised, and I was giving the children what they needed, which was, you know, some structure, you know, love above everything else, but structure, rules, and things that they hadn't had before. That was a positive that I drew from the whole experience. Because when you've got lots of people questioning your ability to, or first of all, questioning your character full stop, and then questioning your ability to look after your own children, it's a big offense to the human character. And to have professionals actually say, no, what you're doing is right. The children actually need more of what you're giving them. It's pretty refreshing, which was helpful in a very dark time. We've fast forwarded, and the contact was again fine when they were with me, and it was just very problematic at handovers. Multiple court orders with child arrangement orders were made, and they were broken by the children's mother, by either not delivering them or continuing to alienate me, you know, with children running away from me, children being verbally abusive, damaging my house, and basically they were, and again, this is something that was found, they were under a continuous negative narrative of me, which was never going to change. Their attendance at school that they had only just started, because their mother wanted to homeschool them against my wishes. Again, I had to go to court to get them to go to school, mm-hmm. but they were taken out of school inappropriately. They were not delivered to school. The mother wasn't able to get them into school. And I think there's a culmination of all these events throughout the 2.5 years of proceedings. There were so many chances given for the child arrangement orders to be followed correctly for the children in their best interests, and that it was they were continually just disregarded, and we got to a point where there was talk of if this doesn't happen, if the children can't see their father, there is no reason why they shouldn't, he's not a risk, etc., then their consideration will be for them to change living address with a lives with order, hoping that that would actually kick in and encourage people to stick to court orders and enable and facilitate phone calls and in-person contact. But it didn't, unfortunately. So that ultimately led to a lives with order being made with immediate effect from the hearing for the three children to come from their mother and moved full time to my home, because the professionals felt that I could facilitate contact with the mother, I could ensure they were in school, I could ensure that they had what they needed as children, and that the social workers, the judges, all decided that the children were going to thrive and were going to thrive within my care, and actually they were going to be at significant harm if they were left to continue the route they were in. So then we had the whole the move was very quite sudden, and had to be had the use of social workers to help, and we were supported, but within 24 hours school attendances went to 100%. Children had bedtimes, they had set meal times, they were clean, They were, you know, the phone calls and contact, which was none for, I think, as a period of about a month. They had no contact with their mother. When the contact did begin, it has been, you know, to the letter. They have seen their mother and spoken to her as per the order, without anything missed or any problems. And that, you know, they're all, it's an amazing opportunity. It was a huge amount of work to get them to where they should be. And we know it's always a work in progress with kids, and kids are kids, and will always have their problems. But it's really nice now that they've got, instead of big adult problems that they were fully aware of, they've now got kid problems, like they're upset because they can't go on their Xbox, or they're they want to stay up another 20 minutes. You know, that's what kids should have problems about, not being exposed to really damaging narratives about another parent. And you know, when everything's encouraged now, the contact, and gradually looking to hopefully after the school holidays increase it and get to a point where they spend more time. But again, it's a very slow process, and the structured progression of contact through court was done in that very sense, to prevent any relapse for these children to decide to not come here, not come home, or for them to be exposed to this negativity again. They're fantastically are doing fantastically well, incredibly resilient considering what they've been through, and it's been a real test of myself, but also it's been a real pleasure to be able to have them full time, be a dad, bring these kids up, and give them what they need from a parent. The kids need that parent, you know, a strong parent in their life that's going to provide for them and, you know, give them that security, which they get with structure, school, bath times, meal times, you know, all the things that go along with being a kid, you know, as well as all the, you know, the given stuff of affection and playing and sport. You know, it's been a real privilege to be able to do that, and it sounds crazy because they're my children, but it was at that, you know, when you spent that long away from your kids, I feel lucky to have saved them in a way, because I fear that if I'd have given up on them, I probably wouldn't be seeing them at all. So it's been incredibly hard, spent a huge amount of money, had to gone pretty much bankrupt, and given my whole being to trying to help them, and it has paid off. And now they have a nice positive environment to live in, a clean environment, onwards and upwards, really. It's a, you know, obviously it's a work in progress, and as every family is, but yeah, that's kind of the gist of what's been going on.
Well, firstly, congratulations.
Thank you.
What you describe, there are elements there that are fairly standard, sadly, with a lot of cases. I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
The progression, the false accusations, the abuse by proxy, because being repeatedly investigated for false allegations, which, you know, as you rightly said, the investigations have to happen. Mm-hmm. But having to repeatedly defend yourself is a parent abusing by proxy. You've come through it, and also you mentioned, you know, that the abuse hit you on almost every level, physically, mentally, financially, emotionally, and I mean, again, that's very common, isn't it? And it's just, I don't understand why the courts don't realise this. They seem almost unaware of the levels at which parental alienation and false accusations affects people in family courts.
I think you're right. I think it is overlooked, and I've had to, you know, I'm always trying to improve, you know, better myself and keep well and healthy. You know, I've had to seek support. And you know, I've had counselling. I've had, which has been hugely helpful, and actually has revealed to me that, you know, I've actually been in an abusive relationship marriage for, you know, 15 years.
Yes.
And culminating in the last three, which actually that alone, that self-realization that you've been in that situation, actually when you look at it and have someone else go through it with you, it's a big thing. But I think you're right, the courts don't, I think they seem, whether it's dads or mums or just parents as a whole, but I think that the affected parent, there's no realization of what's actually happened to them. And I know it's all about the children, but it's had a huge impact. It's really, really difficult. I think that half the reason I wanted to get into, you know, writing and, putting pen to paper is and reaching out to people is to try and, you know, support people and speak to people that are struggling, because, you know, these were some of my darkest days where I couldn't see out and I had nothing. Whereas, before it all blew up, I was doing pretty well, you know, in all aspects of life.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm very much about sort of positivity, health, and, you know, mental, physical. And I want to just, you know, spread the word to people that, things can be horrific. And, you know, when you're in it, you're in it, and there's no sort of escape from it. And it's only if you kind of a picture it's being in a helicopter above and looking down at it as objectively as possible, then you can see that actually there is a way out. There will be something that's going to change. When you're in it, it's very hard to see that. But, you know, I've been in contact with a number of dads who have been struggling, and, you know, just, you know, they've wanted to know how I got through it and where I am now in speaking to people that are right at the beginning of the journey, you know, and just offering them some sort of reassurance and, you know, letting them pick my brains if they're going about to go through something similar.
Yeah.
Because I think as men, we don't talk enough. I think men's mental health needs to be addressed, to look after ourselves, but ultimately to be able to, you know, be an effective parent. We're the linchpin. The parents are the linchpins of the family. And if we're not working correctly, you know, if we're not functioning, if we're depressed, stressed, anxious, we're not going to be able to be, you know, optimum parents. So, that's one of the main reasons that I decided to, you know, to write my books.
Yeah. I mean, with the false allegations, as that was the first step, it sounds, with you, although you realise now you'd been in an abusive situation for a long time before that. And that was the case. The false allegations were the first step on parental alienation for me as well. And, it sounds like we might have started off in similar places where we were, you know, doing reasonably well in life. You know, I was very focused into health and wellness, and, you know, I'd had a long career and, no significant worries. With one thing I found with the family court, which we've touched on, is the lack of awareness. I mean, if you are a career criminal, if you go around stealing cars for 5 or 10 years, you're probably quite used to false accusations and probably just see it as an occupational hazard. Mm-hmm. If you're just an average law-abiding taxpayer who's never been in trouble, just the sort of thing that, I mean, at one stage, my first solicitor, I was in quite a bit of a state in the early days about the allegations being made because I'd never encountered anything like this. And she referred, she said, oh, don't worry, it's just low-level stuff. And it wasn't low-level to me, and I don't think it is to probably a lot of people in the early days of these situations. I think with the solicitors and barristers is they've probably seen so much worse that they probably are looking at it as perspective of, well, this is early on, you're going to see a lot more of this. Mm. You just don't realise it. And I don't know that they're very good with people who are new to the system in explaining that. And so you end up on a well-trodden path, but a path that you don't know anything about, and nobody's telling you. And this is, again, I've said it quite a few times on the podcast, I think this is why people such as yourself telling their story is so important. You just mentioned that you talked to some people who were just coming into the family law system. And I think it's so important to get stories like yours to them so that they can make some sort of sense of the path that they are possibly going to go down.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I was lucky to get a good solicitor, but you're right in that I think even to begin with, the allegations were very bad. But despite his experience, he was continually surprised at the next turn of events during the 2.5 years. Which was, yeah, but so I think you're right, definitely, that you're having a personal attack on you, and then you've got someone that's completely used to dealing with it. But yeah, in my case, this experienced solicitor was actually pretty, he was a bit like, wow, that's happening, right, okay. So he was a bit not new to him, but he wasn't expecting it to get as bad as it did, despite me basically predicting it from the word go.
I mean, one aspect like that where I constantly raised concerns, and the solicitor was a bit, well, just didn't see things coming or didn't see things clearly. One catastrophic example of that in my case was the mother at the end of one hearing said that she would have to relocate. Nobody in the court and my solicitor picked up on this, but I did. And I, it got to the stage where the mother said she was going to relocate 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. Now, I raised this with my solicitor, and she said, well, apply for a prohibitive steps order. So I said, okay. Now, I've since found out that the smart thing to do would possibly have been gone to the court in person and asked for an emergency order. Mm-hmm. But the solicitor just put it in the post, and it sat around for a long time. But the solicitor also advised me to tell. I mean, it seems just ridiculous even saying it now, but she said, tell the mother that you're applying for this prohibitive steps order. Yeah. And I have emails since that I've looked at since where I'm saying to the solicitor, this is not a good idea because she will just run. Mm. But the solicitor gave me, in her words, strong advice to tell the mother. At which point, this was fairly early on, it was just a few months into the case. And again, as a newcomer into the system, and I think lots of people will share this experience, you're a little bit in awe of things or intimidated by the process. And when somebody who's got years of experience gives you what they call strong advice, even if it's against your intuition, you can feel a pressure to follow that advice.
Absolutely.
Because you also worry, hang on, if I don't tell the mother, will I be criticised in court for not telling her? Mm-hmm. Going behind her back, raising up in the ante, you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate because I've been in family courts enough to know that you can be criticised. They'll find an angle no matter how you've behaved.
Yeah.
So I did tell the mother, and guess what? So she ran, broke a court order, and my daughter remains 3 hours away 4 years later.
Wow.
Now, to me, that is a clear catastrophic error by the solicitor that has had horrendous consequences for my daughter and me.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, as with a lot of mistakes in the family court, the targeted parent and the child or children are the only ones who bear the brunt of any errors. The solicitor got paid. The court did its business. And nobody, you know, my daughter and I are dealing with that constantly now, the travelling and the stress and other consequences I won't go into of that.
I know, I
got an introduction.
Oh God, I'm sorry to hear that, but I do agree that I think initially when you enter and you instruct a solicitor, again, I was very much like, I have no idea of this. I don't know what's what. But gradually, because it was so ongoing, and, you know, I think we were in court, I don't know, up to 10 times. Mm. By sort of the sixth hearing, I had kind of not sussed out, but I'd got a grip of, you know, the solicitors basically can be hugely effective, can be hugely helpful, and can definitely do things that you can't do. And, but there would be times where I'd be like, well, you've missed that, or...
Yes.
There should be, you know, this is an actual key point. And it got to a point where I was like, well, do you know what? A, I've run out of money. And B, I think I could do this as effectively as they could at this point, because we kind of covered all the big bits. So, you know, I decided to actually, I'm going to represent myself, and which I did for the last four hearings, which actually was good because I think the judges kind of look at you and kind of they understand, luckily, well, the ones that I had experience of understood that, you know, you're not a professional, and I think you're able to speak from your heart and just put yourself forward as yourself in a good light, and, you know, answer the questions and also challenge, you know, I've been dealing with, you know, high level London barristers who, so, you know, you struggle to think of how these people, how their conscience works to do what they're doing.
Yes.
But it was actually very satisfying to challenge these individuals when they were trying to bully you and not allowing that to happen, and actually calling out the truth. Again, I go back to that every time, and explaining, giving your account of what happened, and challenging anything that was any sort of misinformation, and they try and drag you down a certain path. And it, I don't know, I found it quite much more satisfying being in the driving seat rather than being a passenger. And actually, I think I got a better result because of that. And also saved a bit of money. Which was helpful because, you know, you need that for children and they're not cheap.
No. I think that's really fantastic that you were able to get that result representing yourself. I totally get the points you make. I'm not sure if everybody can represent themselves, and there's also a fear aspect. And so I think it's an individual thing, but I think that you've been able to do this is wonderful, and gives hope And I think your point that you don't have to rely on solicitors is a good one. Because, if you do run out, I ran out of money at the end of my case, and I was facing a top London law firm because the mother, I mean, we had a fact find, and the mother was found to have been abusive, but somehow after that fact find, she got legal aid for the duration or the remainder of the case. I'm not really sure how that can happen, but then that's what destroyed me financially, was because I couldn't go on for two more years with representation. So I ended up in the final hearing on my own against a top law firm. And I asked to adjourn, and the judge wouldn't adjourn it. I put forward very good reasons, I thought, but I think the case, well, I don't want to talk about too much about the final hearing at this stage. I will be possibly doing a whole episode on that, because it was such, well, I just think it was horrendous what happened. But so I think that we're in your case, were you facing somebody who was legally aided?
They weren't. No, they, a long story, but basically, during separation, in divorce, part of the divorce was splitting monies, and all that money went, all of it. And I think that was just utilized, was meant to be used to buy the children somewhere to live, but in fact was used for expensive barristers, which was an utter waste of money.
I agree with your point as well about the people who are barristers in that industry. I mean, what they did was butcher me completely, but they had a 50-page judgment that said that the mother was abusive. So how they sit that with their conscience, I don't know. But I think that's just something that the legal profession doesn't seem to have a problem with in many cases.
I think another realization for me was, you know, at the beginning, it's all very much, well, you know, they're helping you, this person's going to help you do what you need to do, which they do. But then you have to, it suddenly clicks, actually, do you know what? They are getting paid. That's their job. And they are, you know, they clock, you know, an email, they clock on the time it takes to read it, they bill you, and it's, you know, that's their career that they've chosen. But it's having that mind change that actually they are there to help you, but use them wisely, use their time wisely, because it just mounts up horrendously.
I think sometimes people in the new to the system might think, oh, this solicitor or barrister is in my court, they're batting for me, and they are to an extent, but you're just another punter, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they don't care about your child or you. They'll do what they can, but in the same way, if somebody comes to paint your house, they'll do what they can, but they don't really care about your house, you know. So, and I think, I mean, I can understand a painter or decorator having that point of view. I can't understand really a barrister or a solicitor, but yeah, that's just, I think it's just the way it is.
Well, you know, prime example that our situation was, although the decision was made, it was like, that's happening, the children will move. And despite all that money being made, all the investigations having taken place, the sort of all the evidence being there, it was challenged and taken to the High Court, which was very quickly thrown out. And you know, again, this is, if you have a barrister that would be like, yep, no, let's go for that, let's do that, well, that's a good idea, when knowing that actually there's very slim chances of anything changing, sort of demonstrates what their sort of end goal is. But there we go.
With your case, you mentioned there were problems with school attendance and cleanliness. And you mentioned also a psychologist was involved. Were there sort of, I mean, I'm not trying to pry, but I'm just, were there mental health aspects with the other parent that were manifesting in lack of school attendance and
And the fact that the best thing that's happened to the children is they're in school, because it's when children aren't in school, they're not being monitored, they're not being seen by anyone impartial. And you know, when social services are like, oh, well, we'll, you know, we'll speak to the schools, and I'm like, well, they're not in school. So as soon as they were in there, and they were in there regularly, initially before they moved to me, you know, there were constant issues with going in, etc., and being in school, being taken out of school with problems with hygiene, etc. But then the school, it's great that the schools were involved, because they've seen the change from as soon as they came to me, and then having sort of regular meetings with them, and just hearing positive things, which is again great to hear, but also for future, it's very useful.
Yeah, and how has the mother taken the change? Have things thawed now? Obviously, court has finished. Has there been any improvement with the practicalities at all?
No. Unfortunately, it should have been. I've continually been harassed, to the point where I had to get police involvement on a couple of occasions. So no, it hasn't. There's been problems with the schools, people turning up at schools when they shouldn't be, being late, dropping kids back to me. So no, it hasn't, unfortunately. But I'm at a point where, you know, these children need to have time with their mother, and I want that to happen, but I want it to happen without the repercussions that we had previously, which is really hard when, you know, they want to see their mum, but they also know why they're here, because it's been said to them in black and white by social services. It's a really, really tricky one. But yes, I think it's just going to be my life from now on.
Have the children adjusted fairly? You said that the change happened quickly. Have they adjusted? I think you said that they had, but what I'm trying to get at is the early days. Did it take them a while?
It took them a little while to understand why, and you know, there are lots of when am I going home? But, you know, we were supported, which was helpful, but again, giving them child appropriate information as to, you know, they're going to be staying here long term, this is their home. You know, it's just that bedding in period of, I mean, it was really like a few weeks and that was it, really. The school issue had just gone overnight. They were all in school. No, you know, there weren't any issues with that. They've all adapted really well. And my eldest had gone from, you know, people see him now compared to a year ago, and they're like, wow, this is like a completely different kid. You know, this kid is now standing tall, confident, making eye contact, you know, play fighting with me, you know, big top joker around the house. And it's actions speak louder than words, I think. And it's so nice to see. We obviously still have hiccups and normally around contact, but this is getting slightly better with lots of work and some help from the schools. So we will continue on a sort of nice positive trajectory, and the kids will be able to thrive and continue to sort of develop into healthy, more well-adjusted older children.
That's really good to hear. What level of contact do they have at the moment with the other parent, and is it progressing? Will it increase over time?
So yes, it will increase, and it was initially like fortnightly. Again, similar to what I had. So I had an hour, then 2 hours, then 5 hours, then overnight, and then two overnight. So it's still built.
It seems like almost a template, but okay.
Yeah, definitely. But it, as long as it continues to go, I say go well, that we still have a lot of scope to improve. But I'm continuing to encourage it and promote it, and it will progress. I think this will hopefully remain. Well, this is at the moment, unless it's taken back to court, this is their home. It'd just be nice for them to have a normal setup where there aren't issues. But whether that will happen or not is not really in my hands.
No. One word you haven't mentioned is CAFCAS. Mm-hmm. I just wondered, were they involved in it? Because you mentioned social workers.
We had a CAFCAS guardian appointed very early on, mm-hmm. Because they felt that they, I think they just suspected something wasn't right, and they needed someone to act in their best interest, and they were absolutely pivotal in getting to the truth and improving and escalating contact and to the point where they moved here. So they were sort of incredibly helpful really sort of saved the day, because you hear very mixed things about CAFCAS, having spoken to other people, but I was very lucky that it was a positive experience and I think I'd be in a different situation if without their involvement.
That's wonderful. As you say, you hear different things about CAFCAS, so I find it quite rare to hear somebody say that they've had a good experience, so it's really wonderful that you have. It's great to hear that. How did they, because in my case we had a guardian, but we didn't have social services. We had social services involved early on, but then they left the case and we just had a guardian. But it sounds like in your case you had CAFCAS and social services. How did they work together, or were they working independently?
They worked independently, but linked up, communicated a bit. I think the issue was that when the allegations, initially safeguarding concerns were raised right at the beginning by the mother, they were investigated, put to bed, and continually, even up until a year ago, safeguarding, sort of malicious safeguarding reports were being, safeguarding concerns were being made to GPs, activity leaders, schools, clubs, parents, everything like that. So the social services were involved a few times to quash these malicious accusations. They were in and out a fair bit. I was just going to say, there were, right at the beginning, I felt hugely, again, we won't go back to the allegations and feeling sort of persecuted. I felt I was judged very immediately, judged being a bloke, being, I think assumptions were made because of my, my physicality, the way I look. I think it was initially unfairly I was judged until people got to know me, but then they proved to be pretty helpful once they kind of got to grips with the situation.
So were social services involved right to the end? In other words, I assume you had a Section 7 from CAFCAS that went to the judge. Did social services provide a similar report, or were they off the case by the...
No, they did as well, yeah. They did and just echoed what the Guardian had said. You know, that these children weren't thriving, and they now are, and they need to remain here. And so that they were singing off the same sheet, thankfully. Well, it was quite obvious. So it was just, again, very nice to have, you know, this truth to come out and to be to be cleared, really. And for these children to, you know, reach their potential.
I mean, going back to what we were saying about solicitors and barristers perhaps not having empathy or understanding, and others in the court system, I wonder whether parental alienation is rooted in mental illness. I mean, to actually do that to a child, I don't think you can be said to be well, because it's quite a planned, and it's over a long period as well. It's not just a one-off. And again, false allegations as well. It's an orchestrated campaign. So, and so I think you have possibly serious mental illness issues with parental alienation and false accusations in the family courts. But I think as well, you have mental health repercussions for the victim, the targeted parent, and the child or children. And I wonder if the family court should be reformed in the way that it handles this, that in that, you know, at the moment they recommend mediation from the start, but I wonder if there should also be a mental health, maybe a counselling offered to parents both before and after court, because at the end of court as well, it's basically the court closes its book and off you go to deal with the fallout. And nobody monitors or cares about the mental health of either parent after court. And I think that things could be improved by looking at a mental health assessment or counselling before things go to court, and afterwards as well. What do you think about that?
I think that would be hugely beneficial. I think that it would not only set the scene of the individuals involved and the family and the dynamics, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge in-depth. It would, you know, need access to records, etc., and some sessions to find out about the family. And I think afterwards as well, if there was like a small sort of monthly catch up, I think actually it's probably going to save the taxpayer money in the long run. With you think of the repercussions. I mean, I'm very lucky. I've had I've had some very good support with basically post traumatic stress, and and had I not had that, I would be having to use other services. And you know, we live in a world where we're, you know, overpopulated, and the NHS is hugely overwhelmed. If there could be a tag on, I think it would financially be better off for the country, and help support people a bit more afterwards, because it literally is, you know, final hearing, bye-bye, that's it, done. And that's the same with, you know, all the social workers, everything. And it was a bit of a like tumbleweed afterwards. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I think there should be some sort of package in place.
Yeah. I mean, also there's the family court doesn't keep statistics of outcomes. So it's almost guesswork. You know, it doesn't track a child's outcome 5 years after court, 10 years after court. And so we don't know if what judges and CAFCAS are recommending actually works. Mm. We don't know. So I think there are a couple of bolt-ons you could put at the end of these cases, And I think it would inform the system, which can only be a good thing. It just seems very blinkered that they have this, as you say, you know, the cutoff at the end of the tumbleweed moment at the end of family court, and then no more. The system is just blind to whatever happens afterwards.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any sort of like audit trail, or it would be sensible, wouldn't it, to follow up and get some even after, you know, has this been a successful decision? You know, the decisions we've made, difficult decisions are made on a daily basis, but have they been the right ones? How do we know that, you know, one judge might have a thought process that they continually come up with a similar sort of algorithmic thought process, and that might not be right, and that might not fit all cases. I think it would be very useful to have some kind of follow up.
Yeah. I mean, how do you improve a system if you don't know if it's performing well?
Look at anything, any business, it's always continual improvement, isn't it? It's governance, audits, it's in every industry, but it would make a huge amount of sense to do that. But again, it's money and resources and time. So,
Okay, that's part one of our discussion with Edward James. Please join us next time for part two.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.